This is Representative Michael Howard, and I'm calling the conference committee to order for House File 3100, the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Act. Thank you to all the members and the public that are participating in this and viewing as we do a virtual conference committee. We keep having firsts in the legislature, and I think this is the first virtual conference committee. Just to walk folks through the agenda, we plan to just have a few brief opening comments by myself and Senator Jensen. We'll then have a walkthrough of the bill by Senate counsel. And one small change, we're going to have public comment come next on the agenda. We have a couple folks that have signed up to testify, and then we'll have member discussion. So with that, I just want to thank all the conferees for being here and just offer a few brief overarching comments. You know, the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Act began with a simple premise that Minnesotans shouldn't lose their life because they can't afford their insulin. And since then, through many, many months and hours and hard work by folks on this conference call and otherwise, we took that basic comment, basic principle into a strong, sturdy, nation-leading bill that I think we can all be proud of as Minnesotans. And in broad strokes, we're going to create a safety net for those at risk of not affording their insulin and also create a system to connect folks to long-term affordable insulin and have insulin manufacturers participate in this solution. And so I look forward to walking through the bill and moving this forward and thank all the conferees and all the members. And just lastly, you know, when I first introduced this bill in committee, you know, I made the comment that, you know, we can never bring Alec back, and that's heartbreaking. But with our work today, Alec is going to save the lives of Minnesotans, and we are eternally grateful to the Smith-Holt family and to everyone who has worked so hard to pass this bill. And with that, I want to invite Senator Jensen to make some opening comments as well.
Thank you, Representative Howard. I appreciate it. There's many heroes in this effort, but I would just like to start out by saying thank you to the Senate conferees. Thank you to Senator Pratt and Senator Benson and Senator Rosen and Senator Wicklund. And certainly I express my appreciation to all the conferees from the House on this conference committee as well. To the viewing public, I would say this is difficult times, what with the COVID-19 challenge, as well as trying to get the insulin bill done. So we were asked to honor the Minnesota open meeting law and not have any quorums without having a public meeting. So what it meant was lots of small conversations to the side with maybe two people, three people, four people. But we never met. We talked over the phone. And it was Representative Howard's initiative yesterday afternoon and evening to call the meeting and say, okay, let's have a meeting so that we can indeed follow somewhat that normal process of a conference committee culminating in a vote and then getting a signed conference committee report forwarded to the House and the Senate. So thank you, Representative Howard, for that. We're trying to, if you will, grab onto some of the normal process by doing this. And so we'll have stakeholders talk today, and we'll have members of the conference committee have a chance to ask questions, and then we'll move into a formal vote. So I very much appreciate Representative Howard's work. And I think the real hero today is Alex Smith. When we all depart this earth, sometimes we would all hope that there might be a legacy that lives beyond our own lives. And certainly that's happening with Alex Smith today. So thank you, Representative Howard.
Thank you, Senator Jensen. Next on the agenda, Senate Counsel Katie Kavanaugh will walk through the bill before us.
Okay, can everybody hear me? What I'm going to walk through is the conference committee report that's before the conference committee, dated April 6th, 2020. To begin with, section one. Has asked you to start your video. Okay, so you people want to see me, is that it? Okay, Section 1 allows this act to be cited as the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Act. Section 2 was in both the House and Senate bill. This requires group health plans and health plan companies to provide written notice to enrollees with dependent child coverage that the dependent's child's coverage ends when the child reaches the age of 26. This notice must be sent at least 60 days before the child reaches the age of 26. I believe that was the Senate timeline. And it requires that the notice also include information about accessing the MNsure website. Section 3 was in both the House and the Senate bills. It requires the information on the Insulin Safety Net program to be added to the information provided by the Board of Pharmacy on their website. Section 4 creates the Insulin Safety Net program. This is really a combination of both House and Senate provisions, but it does use the format that was in the Senate bill. Subdivision 1 requires by July 1, 2020, that each manufacturer of insulin establish procedures for making insulin available to eligible individuals who are in urgent need of insulin and who are in need of an affordable long-term supply of insulin. It also includes definitions. We define manufacturer as manufacturers of insulin that is self-administered or are administered on an outpatient basis. There is also an exemption for insulin manufacturers with an annual gross revenue of $2 million or less from insulin sales in Minnesota. And it also exempts insulin products if the product if the product's wholesale acquisition cost is $8 or less per milliliter or per applicable National Council of Prescription Drug Plan per unit. And this $8 is adjustable annually based on the consumer price index. Subdivision 2 describes the eligibility for the urgent need safety net program. And to be eligible, an individual must attest to being a resident of Minnesota, not being enrolled in medical assistance or Minnesota care, not being enrolled in prescription drug coverage that limits the total amount of cost sharing for insulin to $75 or less for a 30-day supply, regardless of the type or amount of insulin prescribed, not having received an urgent need supply of insulin through the program within the last 12 months unless it's otherwise authorized, and must attest to being in urgent need of insulin. This defines urgent need of insulin as having a readily available for use less than a 7-day supply of insulin and needing insulin in order to avoid suffering significant health consequences. Subdivision 3 describes access to the urgent need insulin program, requires MNsure to develop an application form to be used by the individual in urgent need of insulin, and it requires that this form be made available on the MNsure's website and be made available to pharmacies, providers, hospitals, and clinics. It also requires the individual in need of insulin to present to the pharmacy a completed, signed, and dated application form, and requires that the individual have a valid insulin prescription and provide to the pharmacy identification indicating Minnesota residency. It requires the pharmacy to dispense a 30-day supply of insulin and then notify the prescriber of the insulin prescription no later than 72 hours after the insulin has been dispensed. It requires the pharmacy to submit to the manufacturer a claim for payment for the dispensed insulin that's in accordance to the National Council of Prescription Drug Program standards for electronic claims processing. And it requires the manufacturer to reimburse the pharmacy in an amount that covers the pharmacy's acquisition cost. It also authorizes the pharmacy to collect a co-payment from the individual in an amount not to exceed $35 for the 30-day supply. It also requires the pharmacy to provide the information, provide the individual with an information sheet that is required to be developed by the Board of Pharmacy, and a list of trained navigators for the individual to contact if the individual desires to assist in accessing ongoing insulin options, including assisting the individual in applying for the manufacturer's patient assistance programs. It also requires the pharmacy to retain a copy of the individual's application that the application submitted to the pharmacy for the urgent need insulin. Subdivision 4 describes the long-term safety net program. This requires each insulin manufacturer to make their patient assistance program available to any individual who meets the requirements that are contained in this subdivision. And it requires the manufacturer to provide the Board of Pharmacy with information regarding the manufacturer's assistance program. The eligibility requirements that the manufacturer must use for its patient assistance program for Minnesota residents is that the individual must be a Minnesota resident with a valid Minnesota identification card or driver's license or permit, must have a family income that is equal to or less than 400% of the federal poverty guidelines, must not be enrolled in medical assistance or Minnesota care, must not be eligible to receive a health care program through a federally funded program or receive drug benefits through the Veterans Administration, and not be enrolled in prescription drug coverage that limits the total amount of cost sharing for insulin to $75 or less for a 30-day supply, again, regardless of the type or amount of the insulin prescribed. In paragraph C, an individual, it states that an individual who is enrolled in Medicare and meets the other requirements in this subdivision may be eligible for the manufacturer's patient assistance program if the individual has spent $1,000 on prescription drugs in the current calendar year. Paragraph D specifies that an individual may apply for a manufacturer's assistance program either directly through their healthcare practitioner or may contact the trained navigator for assistance in applying to the manufacturer's program. Subdivision 5 describes the manufacturer's responsibilities, requires that upon request of an application for the manufacturer's patient assistance program from an individual, requires the manufacturer to process the application and determine the individual's eligibility within 10 business days. And it also specifies that the manufacturer must determine that if the manufacturer determines that the individual is not eligible, the individual has the right to appeal that determination to a three-person panel that is put together by the Board of Pharmacy. In paragraph B, it requires the manufacturers to provide an individual with an eligibility statement if they are determined eligible or other indication that would indicate that the person or the individual was eligible for the manufacturer's patient assistance program. And this statement or whatever is being provided is valid for 12 months, and eligibility is renewable upon a redetermination of eligibility. Paragraph C specifies that an eligible individual has that has prescription drug coverage through an individual or group health plan allows the manufacturer to determine that the manufacturer's co-payment assistance program may be a better fit in addressing the individual's needs, and requires the manufacturer to inform the individual of this and provide them with any necessary coupon to submit to the pharmacy. There is additional language that says that in no instance shall an eligible individual be required to pay more than the $50 for a 90-day supply that is provided in this program. Subdivision 6 describes the process. It requires individuals to submit to the pharmacy the eligibility statement that the manufacturer had provided the individual. The pharmacy then submits an order to the manufacturer containing the name of the insulin product and the dosage necessary that is contained in the prescription. The manufacturer then, upon receipt of an order from the pharmacy, is required to send to the pharmacy a 90-day supply of insulin as ordered at no charge to the pharmacy or patient. Upon receipt of the insulin from the manufacturer, the pharmacy is required to provide the insulin to the patient at no cost to the patient, except that the pharmacy is authorized to charge a patient a copayment not to exceed $50 for the 90-day supply of insulin. The manufacturer is required to send a pharmacy an additional 90-day supply upon receipt of a reorder at no charge to the pharmacy or patient. And it authorizes the manufacturer to send the insulin directly to the patient if the manufacturer provides a mail order option. Subdivision 7 describes the Board of Pharmacy and MNSURE's responsibilities. It requires the Board of Pharmacy to develop an information sheet to be posted on its website describing the urgent need insulin supply program and each of the manufacturer's patient assistance programs and how to access these programs and how to contact a trained navigator for assistance. Paragraph B requires the board to inform individuals who access the urgent need insulin or a manufacturer's patient assistance program that they can participate in a patient satisfaction survey that is going to be conducted by the Department of Health. Paragraph C requires MNSURE to develop a training program for the navigators to provide navigators with the necessary information and resources to assist individuals in accessing these appropriate programs. Paragraph D requires MNSURE to compile a list of these trained navigators and have the list available through the Board of Pharmacy's website. And paragraph E authorizes payment to a trained navigator of a one-time application assistance bonus of $25. Subdivision 8 requires the Board of Pharmacy to compile a three-person panel to review an individual's eligibility. If the manufacturer determines an individual is not eligible for the manufacturer's patient assistance program, it requires that this panel render a decision within 10 business days, and it specifies that the panel's decision is final. Subdivision 9 authorizes an additional urgent need 30-day supply of insulin to be dispensed by a pharmacy if an individual has applied for medical assistance or Minnesota Care, but has not been determined eligible, or has been determined eligible, but coverage has not become effective, or the individual has requested a review from the Board of Pharmacy of a manufacturer's determination, and the individual has not, received a decision on that review. Subdivision 10 authorizes the Board of Pharmacy to assess administrative penalties against the manufacturers for noncompliance. These penalties would be start out at $200,000 per month, with the penalty increasing to $400,000 per month if noncompliance continues for 6 months, and increasing again to $600 per month after 1 year, and continuing at $600 per month as long as the manufacturer continues to be in noncompliance. It also specifies that the manufacturer is subject to an administrative penalty if the manufacturer does not maintain a hotline for individuals to call for assistance accessing their patient assistance program, and it lists it requires the manufacturer to list on the manufacturer's website the eligibility requirements for their patient assistance programs for Minnesota residents. Subdivision 11 classifies the data that is collected under this section related to individuals seeking access to insulin as private data on individuals and specifies that it may not be retained longer than 10 years. It also states that the manufacturers are required to maintain privacy of all data received from any individual under this program and is prohibited from selling, sharing, or disseminating data received unless specifically authorized by the individual. Subdivision 12 is the anti-kickback provisions that were in the House bill. Specifies that any entity participating in this program is not subject to the liability under Minnesota's conflict of interest statute, and also specifies that no entity's participation or administration of the program seeks or requests the entity to seek reimbursement or other compensation for which the payment may be made in whole or in part under a federal health care program. Subdivision 13 requires that each insulin manufacturer submit an annual report to the Board of Pharmacy, and it also requires the Board of Pharmacy to submit the information that has been submitted by the manufacturers to the legislature, as well as any administrative penalties assessed by the Board of Pharmacy. Subdivision 14 requires the legislative auditor to conduct a program review to determine whether the manufacturers are complying with the program. Subdivision 15 requires the Commissioner of Health to develop and conduct a survey of individuals who have accessed the urgent need insulin program and who have accessed a manufacturer's patient assistance program to determine overall satisfaction with the program. And also requires the commissioner to survey pharmacies to determine if the manufacturers are complying with the program. Subdivision 6 requires the legislature to review the report submitted by the Board of Pharmacy, the program review by the legislative auditor, and the results of the survey conducted by the Commissioner of Health and any other relevant information, and make a determination on whether there is a need for continued implementation of a long-term safety net program to ensure access to affordable insulin, or whether the market has sufficiently changed to where the continuation of the program is no longer needed past December 31st, 2024. It sunsets the long-term program on December 31st, 2024, unless the legislature affirmatively determines that there is a need for the continuation of this long-term program. Section 5 requires the boards of medical practice and nursing to ensure that the licensees under their authority are provided with the information from the Board of Pharmacy on the Insulin Safety Net Program. Section 6 requires MNsure to conduct a public awareness campaign to create awareness of the availability of the Insulin Safety Net Program and the availability of the manufacturer's patient assistance programs. Section 7 adds a severability provision, and Section 8 appropriates money, and I will have, if Dennis Albrecht wants to run through quickly what the appropriations are.
Mr. Albrecht.
Good afternoon, everybody. Section 8 is on line 13.27. paragraph A on line 13.28 is a $297,000 appropriation for MNsure from the Healthcare Access Fund. And it is divided up on line 14.1 for $108,000 to implement the program, and on line 14.2, $189,000 for payments to the navigators. On line 14.4 is the appropriation also to MNsure for the public awareness campaign. On line 14.8 is the appropriation. It's to the Board of Pharmacy, $76,000 per year except for fiscal year 2025, which is when the program ends in the middle of fiscal year 2025. So the base in that year is only $38,000. I should have mentioned that the appropriations for MNSURE are both available until the program ends on December 31st, 2024. The next appropriation on line 14.12 is for the Department of Health, and it is $136,000 in 2021 with a base in fiscal year 2022 of $80,000, and then an effective date there on line 14.16.
Thank you, Mr. Albrecht and Ms. Kavanaugh. That's the walkthrough of the bill. Next, we're going to move to public testimony. We have three people on the list, and I would, as we notified, would ask folks to keep their testimony to 1 minute so that we have time for member discussion as well. So first up, we have Nicole Smith-Holt. Oh, we need you to unmute, or we need staff to unmute. Nicole, can you try again? It looks like there might be an issue with the headphone, the headset, because it looks like it's unmuted here. Maybe we could circle back, Nicole. We had two other folks.
I got you. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So first of all, I would like to extend a heartfelt thank you from my family to all of you. I know this is a challenging time that we're all living in, and I appreciate you all for continuing to work on getting this bill passed. I want to extend an extra thank you to Representative Howard and Senator Jensen for their leadership on this very important issue. The community of diabetics, caregivers, advocates, and families are extremely grateful for your time and dedication to what will result in the savings of lives and the health of Minnesota diabetics. I know this bill is not perfect. Moving the eligibility to 500% and allowing for participation for 90 days would have been preferred. But I and other advocates also understand the importance of compromise and the urgent need to get this bill passed now. I do want to acknowledge and thank you for compromising on the lower copay and the removal of the sunset. For insulin-dependent diabetics who have lost a job and or insurance due to the coronavirus pandemic, every single dollar makes a difference. Losing Alec was a very traumatic experience for our family. The one positive that we are taking away from this event is that it has been a catalyst in the fight for a bill that will help to prevent others from dying the way that Alec died. If this bill was in place 3 years ago, Alec would be here. He would be here brightening the lives of those around him. Jesse would also be here, and he would be alive, and he would be the positive impact that he has had on so many people, and he would still be taking that place. Passing this bill and sending it to the governor for his signature will save lives. In closing, just know that my family is eternally grateful for all of you who have worked side by side with the amazing Insulin for All advocates to complete our mission of saving lives and bettering the health of those in Minnesota who depend upon insulin to stay alive and healthy. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Next, we have Sarah Durr.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Durr. I am a pharmacist by training and the executive director for the Minnesota Pharmacists Association. MPHA represents pharmacists and pharmacies throughout the state of Minnesota. We also work with our health system pharmacists through the Minnesota Pharmacy Alliance. We appreciate that you and your colleagues are addressing the insulin affordability problem for patients with this legislation before you today. We applaud your efforts to address an immediate, urgent emergency patient need, as well as provide relief to patients who may have a longer-term affordability issue maintaining their insulin. This is a good bill that will work for patients with diabetes and pharmacists who will work with them to make sure that they have the insulin that they need through this program. MPHA and Minnesota Pharmacists and Pharmacies support the Alex Smith Insulin Affordability Act emergency and long-term insulin legislation. This bill utilizes existing patient medication access infrastructure and a Minnesota-specific manufacturer patient assistance program to help Minnesotans who cannot afford the high cost of insulin. MPHA and all the Minnesota pharmacies appreciate the Senate and House members listening to our initial concerns and advice about how practically this program can work for patients with diabetes seeking access to their insulin in their community pharmacy. After discussing the bill with our pharmacy members, we believe both the emergency and long-term insulin programs are workable from a patient utilization and pharmacy implementation standpoint. The urgent need of insulin qualifying attestation, claims processing, and copayment provisions in the legislation are adequate, and we believe all operational practical considerations have been taken into account. We look forward to working with the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy and MinSure, along with manufacturers of insulin, to make this program work for patients and pharmacies throughout Minnesota. Minnesota pharmacists support affordable medications for our patients, and we look forward to Governor Walz signing this insulin patient assistance program for Minnesotans into law. Thank you.
Up next, we have Leah Greenside.
Thank you, Representative Howard, Senator Jensen, and members of the Conference Committee. My name is Leah Greenside. I live right here in St. Paul with my family, including my 14-year-old daughter who has type 1 diabetes. On behalf of my family and others living with diabetes in Minnesota, thank you. I know that it wasn't easy working on this bill during the best of times, but to reach compromise during a global pandemic demonstrates your great commitment to the Minnesotans who need insulin to live. The high cost of insulin, combined with economic stress as a result of this pandemic, has made establishing this insulin safety net program even more important than before. I ask each of you to vote yes on this bill today so that the bill can be passed and signed into law as soon as possible. It struck me that agreement on this bill was reached during Easter Holy Week and on the eve of Passover. There's a Jewish saying that whoever saves one life saves the whole world. While this bill won't bring back those who are lost, Alec, Jesse, and others whose names we do not even know, this bill will save a life in the future. This bill will save someone's son, daughter, parent, friend, spouse, a whole world. This bill isn't exactly what we advocates wanted. As Nicole said, this isn't a perfect bill, but it is a good bill, a compromise for certain, but good. I look forward to continuing to work with you on strengthening this bill in the future if needed, and also working to address other challenges that Minnesotans face in accessing and affording the medications and healthcare they need to stay healthy and alive. Thank you again for this important life-saving work.
Thank you, Leah. Now we're going to move on to member discussion, and members of the conference committee, below there's a participant tab on your Zoom, and you can use that tab to raise your hand virtually, and I will sort of through the chair call on you. I can also just look for you on the video, and if you just raise your hand, we can do that too. So I will open it up for member questions. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Howard, and everyone on the call. First of all, I really appreciate the hard work that's gone into this. It's been a long time coming. When the House started out with this, the idea, of course, was that no Minnesotan would ever die again because they ran out of insulin and had no supply. And this bill does go a long way toward making sure that doesn't happen again. However, it has a glaring hole, and I just want to point this out. This should have been a much better bill than it is, and I'm really disappointed because there are many people left behind in this bill. I want to point members and the public to, line 4.16 of the bill, where it talks about the identification that needs to be presented in order to get the emergency insulin. So this bill requires that a person prove Minnesota residency with one of three forms of identification. One is a valid Minnesota license. One is a valid Minnesota identification card, a driver's license, or a permit. So if you think about that for a minute, If you are in dire need of insulin and show up at the pharmacy and you do not have one of these very specific forms of identification, you will not get insulin under this program. And even more heartbreaking than that, if you are under 18, your parent must have one of these forms of identification. That means that even an American citizen, a person born in this country who's under 18, whose parent is undocumented, will have to walk away from the pharmacy without the life-saving insulin that they need. I find this really, really troubling. And this is something that in previous negotiations with the Senate made it very clear to us that this was a deal breaker for them. And I just really wanted to get this on the record. Of course, if you save one life, you saved a whole world. I agree with that statement. That is a very important principle of my faith. In this case, we had the opportunity to really make sure that every Minnesotan has access to this program. And the bill as written does not do that. I just really wanted to put that concern on the record. If it wasn't for that concern, I would say this is an excellent bill. It is definitely going to save lives. Unfortunately, it's not going to save all the lives that it could be saving. If a person doesn't have a valid license, if your license is expired, if you only have a tribal ID, if you only have a student ID, you will walk away from the pharmacy without getting the emergency insulin. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Next on the list, I have Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and congratulations to everybody that's worked very hard on this bill. And this is a massive bill. And as we all know, that there'll be some adjustments going forward to this bill. Just one little adjustment that I just have a question on. It's on the $136,000 for fiscal year 21 on page 14, line 12. For MDH to implement the survey to assess program satisfaction. Was that survey meant to, or was the legislature supposed to be briefed on that, the results of that survey, or what's going to happen with the results of that survey? So something to just keep in mind, doesn't mean needs to be adjusted, but we may wanna show some results from that survey. That's all I have.
Thank you, Senator Jensen. Thank you, Senator Rosen. I believe that was a part of the Senate bill, but a good comment for us to look at. Next, I have Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I just wanted to say that I share Representative Liebling's reservations about the bill. I think we all agree that this is a good bill. None of us thinks it's a perfect bill. But I'm proud that we came together as Democrats and Republicans and we found a way to work together to craft legislation that's going to help Minnesotans. I'm so grateful to the advocates who have worked so hard, have advocated, have traveled all over the state, have testified, have worked tirelessly for Minnesotans that need insulin to live. This bill is going to save lives. We have to remember Alec and Jesse and the others who died in Minnesota because they could not afford the insulin that they needed to live. May that never happen again in our state. And this is an important way to honor them. Thank you so much for all of your work, Senator Jensen, and of course, Chair Howard.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. Next on the list, I have Representative New.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And I apologize, but this is the first chance I've had to engage with the bill with other members of the committee. And so I actually have some questions. And first of all, to Senator Rosen's comment, is that covered on page 12, lines 12.16 through 12.18, that the report shall be submitted to the legislature? I think that that's the case?
I think that is the case, Representative.
Okay, excellent. So a couple of questions I have, and I don't know what this process has been. We've not been invited to be engaged in the process, so I'm not sure what the process has been. I don't know who's been involved in the final version of the bill here. But I do have some concerns about once this is enacted, what's going to happen with the bill, and particularly with, let's see here, lines 4.24 through 4.30, it looks like manufacturers incur all of that cost. Is there any compensation for the manufacturers? And have they signed off on that language? I'm just really concerned that we've got constitutional issues with that, with forcing supplying the product without compensation. And my concern here is that this is going to be litigated, and we're going to run into a real problem with not being able to access this program that we really do need people to access. So I'm just wondering if they've been engaged on that, and if this is sort of signed off on, we're all good to go on that.
Representative New, the pharmaceutical companies have been engaged in this process all along. They've had opportunities to come and testify publicly and make their position known.
Has that been the case through these negotiations as well? I mean, certainly we have not been invited to engage, and so I don't know if they have been engaged in this process on the conference report.
Representative New, we've received a letter from the group Pharma, and I believe members of the conference committee were sent that from them. To your question about line 4.24 in terms of the drug manufacturers, they would be supplying or covering the pharmacist acquisition cost. That's essentially the cost that they've sold their medication already for. So it's about a net gain. And I would just call attention to the fact that in the House bill, you remember, this is one of the big differences between the House bill and the Senate bill. The House bill assessed fees on insulin manufacturers that could have totaled $38 million per year. This bill does not include those fees.
Certainly. I think Senator Jensen had a comment as well.
Senator Jensen.
Representative New, I would just say thank you for your question. I think that is always going to be an issue, but I have had just literally innumerable conversations with the individual representatives with Novo Nordisk, Eli Lilly, and Sanofi, and have been strongly led to believe that this is the format of the bill that they thought they could live with most. I know we did get a letter from Pharma talking about a taking. Until the bill is passed, I guess we'll never know exactly what they're going to do, but it is my impression that they can live with this bill. They understand that this bill calls for their patient assistance programs to be reshaped and tailored to what Minnesota law is requiring in regards to our eligibility and our processes. They also know that this most likely will be nation-leading legislation and that other states are watching. I think they're comfortable with that, and they understand that since we're allowing them to use the basic tools that they have put in place for years, I think they are up to the challenge of doing what needs to be done so that this law is complied with.
Thanks, Senator Jensen.
Thank you.
Representative New, did you have any other questions?
I do. Thank you. And I apologize. I will look. I assume that letter from Pharma was emailed. I must have missed that one. I printed most of the documents, but I think I missed that. So I'll go back and review that. Thank you. I'm just concerned that, I mean, like I said, I mean, yes, it's the acquisition cost, but that means that 100% of the cost is on the manufacturers. And so I would just flag that for us moving forward, that we probably, my guess, I mean, hopefully we're wrong, right? But my guess is that this will be litigated, and that's going to cause problems for people having access. My other question is actually just before that, lines for 4.20 to 4.23. Regarding the emergency access, there's this requirement for attestation to that they are indeed eligible. There doesn't appear to be any check on that at any point. And I mean, it says that the pharmacy must notify the healthcare practitioner who issued the prescription. Is the practitioner, I didn't see it anywhere in the language, is the practitioner required to track that information? So for example, I mean, if somebody has a valid prescription, the pharmacy lets the practitioner know that they've received a 30-day insulin supply. What happens with that information at that point?
Representative New, I believe, and Senator Jensen might want to comment on this too, because the contacting the health care practitioner came from our doctor as a way to ensure that if a patient is, if they're facing an emergency and they are at a pharmacy with their last day of insulin, that's an event that could be important for a primary care doctor to know about, to be able to touch base with their patient. So that is the intent of that position. In terms of like the check, that kind of piece, this has been a question as we've drafted this legislation. There's always a balance between providing that immediate access and some sort of complex process that takes more time. So in order to get insulin in the hands immediately in the pharmacy for people that need it, we need a process that has as few barriers as possible. And so folks would attest to being eligible. They would need to present to the pharmacist their valid prescription, as well as the identification that's been mentioned and this on the completed form. That's what would be needed for the patient to secure the insulin.
Sure. So is there any reason that someone could not indefinitely receive the 30-day supply of insulin?
I think I saw Senator Jensen as well.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative New. In regards to what you're asking about initially, Representative New, the whole idea there was to reconnect, if you will, the dots and make certain that a physician would be aware of the fact that they had a patient that was potentially in distress in regards to being able to afford the medication regimen that they were on. There is no need for any additional language, I don't think, because the physician is held to a standard of care, and that would be in another section of law. Your second question that you just asked, what was that again, Representative New?
Well, I'm just the way I read this, there's no checks, and there's no verification system for that 30-day supply. And I think we all agree, there's no question that we need the emergency access. I think the rest of the bill is really provides a good mechanism for getting the long-term access, but I don't see any reason that a person could not indefinitely get the emergency 30-day access. It's just an attestation. There's no verification of that. There's no, and I had misread that. I think your explanation of informing the healthcare practitioner makes much more sense, so that the practitioner can be involved in that long-term care. And I had been reading that sort of as that check, but there is no check or verification. So what would prevent someone from indefinitely receiving that 30-day emergency access?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative New. Essentially, we went over this carefully with the pharmacies, and they have indicated they have a system very much like the MIC system, where when we give a vaccination in the office, that goes, and that's a computerized electronic system that we can all access. Same thing happens with pharmacies. So if someone goes in for a 30-day supply on the urgent program, that will get put in there and tagged. So if they would go to another pharmacy down the street the same day, that other pharmacy would see that that's already been provided and they're ineligible.
This is Representative Howard. I see that Dr. Weiberg with the Board of Pharmacy may have a comment on this as well. And if it could be brief, Doctor, because we're short on time, but thank you.
Absolutely, very brief. All I need to do is confirm what Senator Jensen just said. I'd imagine that the manufacturers are going to want pharmacies to submit claims rather than restock the supplies. And if they do that, it will go through claims processing systems. And that's real time. So the person could not literally go down to the street and get another supply.
Okay. Representative New?
Thank you. I guess my concern is less that they would be stockpiling, but that the next month they would come back again. And it sounds like if Mr. Weiberg is still available, so is his position then, and it looks like, I mean, they get the 130-day renewal, but I guess, again, I don't see the check on that. And if they receive that, would then the pharmacist refuse the 30-day if they're beyond that initial 30 days and the 30-day renewal?
The way that the system works is that the pharmaceutical manufacturers are going to have a company processing these claims, and that company is going to keep records. So if somebody came in 30 days later and a different pharmacy tried to submit a claim, it's going to hit up against the edits that company has, and the company will say, oh, nope, that person is not eligible for another supply, and they'll send the reject back to the pharmacy.
Thank you, Dr. Weiberg.
Chair Howard. And just to clarify, that happens in real time?
Yes, it is. It does. Yep.
All right, Senator Wicklund. Senator Wicklund.
Thank you. Sorry, I was just finding my unmute button. First, I just wanted to say, Senator Rosen, to your question about the survey being used, I know there's one place for sure that it's called out is in subdivision 16, starting on 12.19. It talks about the legislature reviewing the survey, and if we need that to be added elsewhere to make sure that we're reviewing the survey, we can do that, but it is in that section. And then I just wanted to comment that I, in general, and I'm in agreement with this report and supportive of it. And I think we've come together to reach the agreement through compromise. It's not every, the aspects that have been mentioned in terms of providing an ID, I have concerns about those. I do think that the agreement we've reached will help those who are in urgent need of insulin, and it will help others who need to find a way to get access to affordable insulin over a longer term. I think that some of the high points for me are that we've been able to focus on access to emergency supplies with reasonably straightforward eligibility criteria that people can access the emergency supply directly from the pharmacy when they walk in. I think that having the manufacturers responsible for providing the insulin is a key point for me, and also that we've put in accountability measures to make sure that manufacturers are following the processes that we laid out in the program. So there's more work to be done. This isn't the only thing, but I do support it. And I think as we are working to address the COVID-19 pandemic issues, it's really important that we get this bill passed because so many lives have been disrupted by the virus. So I'm really anxious to see this move forward and hope that we can pass it on the floor next week. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I have Senator Pratt on the list, and then I'll go to Senator Jensen for the final word.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And just to some of the earlier comments around proof of residency, I think, quite honestly, that's a pretty easy and reasonable standard to set. This is a program for Minnesota citizens and legal immigrants to be able to get emergency and long-term insulin, and we should be, very targeted to make sure that we're not subsidizing residents from other states. My question is more for Ms. Kavanagh on line 10.18, where we talk about the anti-kickback portion, and we say that, you know, a manufacturer can't seek other sources. We talked last winter about with the pharmaceutical companies about the anti-kickback federal legislation. Have we been able to verify this is sufficient to not be in conflict with that?
Ms. Kavanagh.
Senator Pratt, I think this is from the House. It was in the House bill, so I will defer to Randy Chun if he wants to talk about the language and whether and whether they felt the House felt that it was sufficient. I'm assuming they did.
This is Representative Howard. I can take that question. This issue sort of came up in the conversations with the drug manufacturers related to Medicare. We consulted the Attorney General's office. They didn't find anything problematic, but they suggested this as comfort language. And then Senator
Howard, have we had any feedback from the manufacturers that they believe they can comply with that, not just Attorney General Allison's office?
I can only mention that in the latest letter, or the latest two letters, I don't think this was a specific issue raised. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Representative Howard. If either you or Senator Jensen could point me to the language in the bill that talks about the appeals process for the long-term program for insulin manufacturers, I don't spot one there, and I may be overlooking it, but I just want to make sure that it's there.
Senator Jensen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Albright. Page 9, section 9.4, if an individual disagrees with a manufacturer's determination, and it goes on to talk about that, and then it talks about the panel will be determining what would go on in lines 9.12 and 9.13, and then the additional 30-day supply is available if that process is continuing on, preventing a person from getting on the long-term program.
Okay, good. And then looking forward, I know that there had been talk from a number of stakeholders and members of the coalition, and this is probably a question for Senator Benson, because I know that we both share a desire forward-looking to include biosimilars in this language, and I know that there is a provision in there. I'm wondering if Senator Benson or one of the people on this Zoom could talk to making sure that that's durable.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Representative Howard. And Senator Jensen and I wanted to make sure that people who are coming in with a low-cost insulin product wouldn't have to set up an entire patient assistance program. And so Representative Howard, I believe, proposed this language. Some adjustment in the price is allowed, but right now, because of sunsetting provisions, I'm not so worried about the durability. If this program gets renewed, we'll have a much better idea of how biosimilars are behaving in the market. There's also the $2 million provision. So if you're a very small manufacturer, you're not pushed out of doing business in this state by having to set up a patient assistance program.
Senator Benson, you mentioned the $2 million. Is that by the revenue generated within the state for that biosimilar, or is it the revenue generated by the manufacturer of that biosimilar?
It's by the revenue generated in the state for the insulin product, whether it's a biologic or a biosimilar.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Albright. And I'll go to Senator Jensen for the closing words.
Thank you, Representative Howard. I'm not going to take any more time. I think I would just like to go ahead and move that SGS 20-3100 document be adopted as the conference committee report for HF 3100 and recommended to pass. And I would request a roll call vote.
Senator Jensen has requested a roll call vote. I will ask my legislative assistant, Blake Wilcox, to take the roll.
All right.
As a reminder, everybody needs to unmute to vote.
Yes. Thank you. And because it's a conference committee, I'll be going by chambers. So, Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Albright.
Yes.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Morrison.
Yes.
And Representative New?
Yes.
Thank you. And then we'll go with the Senate here. Senator Jensen?
Yes.
Senator Benson?
Aye.
Senator Pratt?
Yes.
Sorry, say that again, Senator Pratt?
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Rosen?
Yes.
And Senator Wicklund?
Yes.
My count is five ayes, zero nays in both the House and the Senate.
Thank you, conferees. With that action, we will work to get signatures on this conference committee report. I will have to do that electronically. And so we'll be in touch, and is my hope would be that we can figure out a way to get those electronic signatures today and get this report posted so that we'll be in a position to pass Alec's bill on the 14th. With that, I call this meeting adjourned. Thank you.